The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, this is Katsis from Winery Dogs, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
What's up? Rob Bailey here from Pisser. You're listening to Talking Metal.
Mark and John Root.
Mark Striegel, John Astronomy, the Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly. Here's your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal, coming to you from the Gibson Guitar Showroom in New York City. I'm hanging out here with Mark Striegel, my roommate, my original first roommate, Rob Bailey, and we got a great show for you. We've got Rob, and we've got a great interview Mark conducted with Richie Kotzen from the Winery Dogs.
Yeah, and Rob actually was your roommate, and he was my neighbor when I lived in Boston for less than a year. And we're going to talk to Rob, catch up with him, see what he's up to. He's a professional musician. One of the last episodes, two episodes ago, we had Rob from Metal Injection, who's, I would guess I'd call him a professional podcaster.
He's my doctor, too.
He's your doctor, too. Rob Bailey's doctor. And now we have a professional musician. So we're going to hear another. This is almost like a career becoming, talking careers here on Talking Metal, where we're talking to people who make money doing what John and I love, making music and podcasting. And, of course, John and I don't make a living doing either, but we have a lot of fun.
We would like to be making a living doing this, but unfortunately we don't. No, yeah, absolutely. Rob from Metal Injection was great, and really looking forward to hearing your interview with Richie. And I'm really psyched that Rob Bailey, who even before we were roommates, we were friends up at Berklee College of Music. Sir? And I swear to God, Rob, and I know I told you this, I thought you were like the real rock star, like when I went there.
Thanks so much. Yes. Give me one a little closer.
Say that.
Our lips are so close. What am I saying
that
again?
That was the David Lee Roth video.
Yes. Yeah.
What was that? It was from Eat
'Em
Smile.
Yankee Rose.
Yankee Rose, yes. Right. And that guy in the video with the gray hair was their
dad.
Pete
Angelus. Oh, yeah, right. Fancy.
Cool. So this is a great segue. You've mentioned Yankee Rose with Billy Sheehan on bass.
Nice.
We have Rob Bailey, who was actually the one guy who, when we were talking to Mike Portnoy about going to Berklee, we were naming all these people because Mike went to Berklee, I guess, a year before John and I were there. And we didn't know any of the same people for the most part, except for I said Rob Bailey, and Mike Portnoy was like, "Rockin' Rob, yeah, of course I know him." So we have 2/3 of Winery Dogs covered right there. And now let's get to the other third, Richie Kotzen. Let's get into a little music by him right now. This is going back 8 or 9 years ago. This is called Get Up.
My God is playing with fire.
That was Get Up by Richie Kotzen, an old one. And why don't we go right into Static by Mr. Big, which is going to feature Richie and Billy Sheehan.
Yep, that's right. And this is one that the Winery Dogs have actually been known to play at some of their shows. So, cool. Here we go, a little Mr. Big. You just heard was Mr. Big featuring Richie Kotzen, who is our guest here on Talking Metal today. Let's get right into the interview now, and then we're going to come out of the interview and we'll talk with our friend Rob Bailey, who's in the studio with us. This is a sound sample of the Winery Dogs. It's called Time Machine, and following this song, you will hear from Richie Kotzen. Hey, this is Mark from Talking Metal, and on the line we have Richie Kotzen from the Winery Dogs. Hey, Richie, how are you today?
I'm very good. How are you?
Good. I'm excited to talk with you. The album sounds great, one of my favorites of the year so far. And let's talk about the band. I know you have a history with Billy Sheehan from your time in Mr. Big, but how did you guys first hook up with Mike Portnoy?
Well, Billy and Mike were interested in playing together, and they wanted to have a power trio configuration. And so the DJ, Eddie Trunk, who's been a friend of mine for many years, contacted me and asked if I was interested in being a part of this project. And so we ended up meeting at my house, and I have a studio there. And we went in and literally in one day came up with four or five song ideas pretty effortlessly. And at that point, we realized that we had something there and decided to go forward with it. And we ended up with the record we have now.
Wow, cool. Now, according to Wikipedia, which isn't always correct, you guys formed in Brooklyn. Does that mean your house is in Brooklyn?
No. That should read Los Angeles would be the correct city.
Yeah, interesting.
That's funny. Yeah, none of us from Brooklyn.
Yeah, I know. I know Mike's in Pennsylvania, and I thought Billy was in Los Angeles, as I thought you were in Los Angeles, but then I wasn't sure after I read that on Wikipedia. So, guys, never trust Wikipedia. We know that that's not always factual.
Yeah, it's funny. There was something in Wikipedia years ago. You know, I was born in Reading, Pennsylvania, and somehow, you know, I looked there, and they had me in the wrong town, and I had them fix it, and they kept putting it back to this other town. It's like making me crazy. So, no, I wasn't born there.
Well, that's the thing. Anybody can update Wikipedia, so you get all sorts of wrong stuff up there. I was just watching the video for Time Machine, which is great. Did you guys film all the videos on the same day? Is that what happened?
Well, the first three that we released, we filmed all on the same day. And they were originally just to be used for an electronic press kit. And then I guess they ended up getting edited, and we decided just to put them up there as they are. And then the one that's out now for Time Machine, we did that during our rehearsals. We had a couple of days booked to just get everything together for our tour. And on the last day, they had a video crew come in and film us playing that song, and they did a promo video. So that's what just came out now.
Cool. And I really like that song. In some ways, that riff is, it's a very heavy riff, almost Sabbath-y, Alice in Chains sounding to me at the beginning. And the lyrics also kind of seem kind of deep. I'd go behind and change the tide, but where do I come from? Oh, the time machine I ride. Can you explain a little bit, is there, about what the lyrics are actually about?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of about wanting to kind of go back and change things, you know, the mistakes and things that you've done that kind of led you to where you are now. But, you know, I guess, you know, they say a lot of times that, you know, bad patterns are kind of rooted in past experiences. And so it kind of deals with the idea of going back and trying to right wrongs and that sort of thing. But, you know, you kind of don't know where to begin. And that was the premise that I wrote the lyrics around.
Interesting. And so many great songs on this record. The closer I like a lot, Regret. Is that you on piano?
Yeah, I play piano and D3 on that. And I really like that song, too. I'm happy with the way it came out. I remember when we were recording the record, I had said, hey, man, to the guys, you know, I got this song I wrote on the piano. I think it was fit for the band. And I sat down and played it for them, and they liked it. So we went in and cut it, and I was really happy with what they did on it, you know, as a rhythm section. It could have went in a lot of different directions, but really it played it exactly how I had envisioned the songs played. So it's one of my favorite tracks on the record.
Cool. And when you started off, did you start on piano, or was it guitar, or maybe even vocals? Which was your first kind of foray into music?
I started initially on piano, but I was too young. I was only 5, and I really didn't take to it very well. And then a few years later, I started on the guitar, and that took to right away. It, you know, it was So the piano, you know, my parents said, always, oh, you got to practice. You got to practice with the guitar. I just picked it up and went. And, you know, it was kind of what I wanted to do, you know. I'm very lucky that I figured it out at a young age.
And when you say figure it out, was part of figuring out just hours and hours of practicing? I mean, you obviously have some great chops, and usually yeah,
initially
that comes...
Initially, it was learning the instrument, and, you know, I had a private instructor and spent a lot of time listening to records and that sort of thing. But then once I started playing live, I was in a cover band, like Top 40, and I was in high school, and those guys were much older than me. I did that for a few years, and then I realized that I really didn't want to do that. It wasn't really about just getting on stage and playing anything. What I really wanted to do was, you know, create my own music. And I started to realize that the guitar was, you know, it was just a tool, you know, for me to express the ideas that I wanted to express. And then, you know, I started singing, and that's really the focus for me. It's not really, you know, I love music, but to me, it's just music is the outlet. You know, what I really love is the whole creative process, and, you know, writing a song and singing it from beginning to end. And, you know, that could kind of transcend into anything. I mean, you know,
right?
Maybe even architecture, for example, designing a building, or, you know, a painting or something. I mean, it's that creative outlet that I really love more than anything.
Right on, right on. And when I listen to this record, it has a very live feel to it, which led me to want to ask you, did you guys record it like as a band live, or would you go in one at a time and do your tracks?
Well, we recorded it live in the sense that we're actually playing. I mean, there's no drum loops or auto-tune or anything of that nature, but once we had everything written, we went in the studio. We spent 2 weeks on drums, and then those guys went off on a tour with another project, and I went in there for about a month and just dealt with what I had to deal with, guitars, vocals, actually finished writing some things were up in the air. And once that was all finished, then Billy came in and did all his keeper parts. And at that point, everything was pretty much ready. We took some time away just to kind of evaluate. And then it came back again and did percussion and background vocals. And then that was the end. And then we sent it off to Jay to mix it. And there you have it.
Cool. When you look back at the two albums you did with Mr. Big, do you have good memories of doing those records? And are there certain songs that stand out as your favorites?
The Mr. Big thing was interesting for me because the year that I joined the band, I had a lot going on. Somehow I released two solo records that year. I recorded a record with Stanley Clark, and then I was obviously doing the first record I did with Mr. Big. And so I was really, I don't want to say I was distracted, but I definitely had a lot going on. So my memory from that year is really kind of scattered. You know, I have memories from being in the studio with them, but then a lot of memories being on tour with Stanley. And the one thing that stands out the most for the Mr. Big memory is when we did our first show in Japan. It was in the Tokyo Dome.
Wow.
Or maybe not. It was the Osaka Dome. And we were opening up for Aerosmith, and it was the Millennium Countdown. And so that was a great night. And a lot of fun. And you know, they were a lot of fun to play with and tour with. And second record, we did that record in my house, the same place that we did the Winery Dog record.
Mm, okay.
And you know, it was good experiences, and you know, they're great guys. I don't have anything outstanding that I can say that's sticking out. I don't have any big stories to tell,
right.
But it was overall a good experience.
Cool. How about going way, way back to 1989 when you did your first album and being in the studio with Steve Smith, Stu Hamm, Jason Becker? Any memories from doing that album that you could share with us?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a very exciting time for me. I had you know, no idea what to expect. And I had just gotten that record deal, which was my primary focus at the time, was trying to get noticed by Shrapnel Records. And Mike Varney ended up signing me. And Jason was an amazing help in making that record, because I had never made that kind of record before. As a matter of fact, I hadn't made a record other than the little EP that I made with my original band back in Pennsylvania. So once I got out there, Jason had already done some records for Shrapnel, so he did a procedure and was able to coach me through it. And it was an interesting record, you know. I don't really feel like it was a record that really defined who I really was at the time, because I was so young, still kind of searching my direction. But by the time I did my second record for Shrapnel, I pretty much realized what it was that I wanted to do as far as being a recording artist. So in a weird way, I kind of look at that second record as my first record.
Right on, right on. Do you ever hear from Jason Becker through the years?
Oh, yeah, a lot. And we've done I've participated in several benefits for him, and I get to see him at least once or twice a year.
Cool, very good. One of my favorite records that you did was the Get Up record, probably 8 or 9 years ago. Any chance you guys would ever include any songs off of that record in the Winery Dogs set list?
In the Winery Dogs, I don't think so. I do some of the songs in my set. We do Remember, obviously, and we've done So Cold quite a few times. There's a live version of both of the my live DVD from Brazil from a few years ago.
Cool.
As far as the Winery Dogs, we do play a little bit of one of my songs called You Can't Save Me.
Ah, all right.
Which is kind of a segue, because I do this little acoustic bit in the show, and it's a nice way to get out of that and get the band back on stage. But, you know, the Winery Dogs is a new band, and we've got our songs, so we're really focusing on what we're doing.
Right on. Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys in New Jersey on October 29th at the Starland Ballroom. You'll also be in Rhode Island on the 31st, Halloween, Cleveland on November 2nd, and Pierre's in Fort Wayne on November 6th. Richie, thanks so much for joining us on Talking Metal.
Awesome, thank you.
That was I'm No Angel, a little sound sample there from the Winery Dogs. Great interview with Richie, man.
Yeah, it was great to get Richie on the podcast, because I believe possibly the first song we ever played on Talking Metal back in 2005 was Richie Kotzen.
Excuse me. Damn, dude.
Little belch. Yeah, that's the pretzel I ate at Penn Station coming up.
You know, can I talk?
Yeah, yeah. So we are here.
No. I was going to say, I saw Richie Kotzen play when he was 16 in a bar down in Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah,
yeah, well, that's where he's from, man.
Like,
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, because you remember Corky Tuning from Berkeley?
Yeah, I totally remember Corky.
Yeah, they were friends. And, like, I was, like, it was, like, a Christmas break or something. And, like, I was down visiting my cousin, who's also from that area. She's like, let's go to a rock club. I was like, okay. And he was up there, and he was killing it.
Wow.
Like, I was like, uh-oh.
Man.
He killed it.
Wow, it's like 16.
And playing, like, a lot of Foreigner tunes. I remember it's like, wow, that's like half the Foreigner catalog right there.
Man.
Kind of interesting.
Cool. And just to refresh your memory, Talking Metal listeners, we are in the studio with our friend Rob Bailey, who John and I have known for literally decades. He lived next door to me when I was at Berkeley. And John, you guys were roommates after Berkeley. Is that what happened?
Yeah, we were roommates on East 9th Street in New York City. And there's a great story on why we were roommates. Rob was walking down the street and he saw a piano scarf. Why don't you continue on with that?
No, I want to hear your version.
Okay. And he just said, I only know one guy who would possibly wear a piano scarf.
I've seen you wearing that
yeah,
scarf.
No, it's not me.
Oh, no. Rob Ferentino. Right. I've seen him. I knew it was somebody, but I've seen him wearing that scarf.
Yeah. And I was looking for, to move to New York City, and it just all worked perfectly. Rob Ferentino called me up and said, Rob Bailey's looking for a roommate. And I thought, oh, very, very cool. And you found the apartment, and I came down, and we were roommates.
You know, last week, I walked down 30-something street, and the guy who was our landlord, I noticed he's going out of business.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was weird. He was like a rug salesman or something.
Oh, wow.
It's like, clearance sale, come get your rugs.
Oh, no, that's funny. Now, here's the funny thing. I think the window guards that you went out and got are still in those windows, but remember, we never actually screwed them in.
We never did.
So...
The exact address of apartment will not be revealed tonight.
So, Rob, we interviewed Mike Portnoy, of course, yes, of the Winery Dogs.
Great drummer. Mm-hmm.
And this is going back, I think, 2009, 2010. But mm-hmm. we were on the Dream Theater tour bus with Mike. And again, I said this earlier in the podcast, we were at Berkeley, I guess, a year after Mike was there, and mm-hmm. we were naming names of people, and of course, your name came up, and he immediately knew who you were, and I think even said, tell him hello.
Cool.
And what are your memories of Mike Portnoy back circa 87 or 88?
No, before that,
86?
Yeah, 80.
Yeah.
No, it's 85.
Right, okay.
85, 86. And,
you guys were students together at Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Me and Mike specifically had harmony class together. He took it really far, as you can tell. But my memories are not only about him, but Petrucci and Mae Young as well. And I've so much respect for those guys and so much admiration for the success they've had. Amazing. And I recall... Wow, that was messed up. I recall vividly, we got to explain a little something about Berkeley. So these guys met at Berkeley, the three of them. I think John and John knew each other, and then they found Mike, you know. They got lucky on that one. And you could rehearse at the school.
Right, you had to sign up
for the
rooms.
But you had to sign up for the room. Like, let's say if you wanted to rehearse at 8, you had to get up at 6 in the morning and wait in the line to sign up for the room. And my memory is of John Petrucci at the top of the frickin' staircase, first in line on every Monday, let's say, every Wednesday and Friday, waiting for that rehearsal space. You know what I mean? And just sitting there, just shredding on an Area Pro 2, you know? And... yeah. And then John, the bass player, would get the next slot for 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock or whatever it was. So he would get the same room that John had just gotten.
Right.
So these guys could rehearse all night long.
Wow.
And then Mike would get the last one. I'm sure that John wasn't the only one who got up at 6. But does that make sense?
Yeah.
What
now,
I'm saying? I hope
here's
it,
the weird
the
thing.
It does.
You listeners.
They worked their asses off. I'm telling you.
This wasn't the rehearsal rooms like when you go in and all the gear is there.
No.
You had to bring your own gear and your own drums and set everything up like you were playing a gig. And that was crazy. But those dedicated guys would these guys would practice for 6 hours a day. And just to be able to do that, you had to do all this pre-planning and it was a big deal. But
I remember they had a little lamp that was this tiny little bedside lamp that they would put in the middle of the room and turn off all the lights, and that was their vibe. And they were called Majesty at the time.
Yeah.
And I remember going to see them audition singers and keyboard players and real misfires too. It was just wow, I don't think he's your guy.
Right. They actually in the Dream there's a documentary that Dream Theater did where they talk a lot about those days. And Berkeley and whatnot. And so Rob, back in those days, when I first met you, I guess it would have been the fall of 87.
That sounds right.
And you were in the room next to me in the Mass Ave dorm rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I always found you a unique guy because you weren't really the metal dude. There were so many metal dudes. But then on the flip side, you weren't the jazz guy either. So what, when you were coming up, because you've gone on to have a career as a guitar player, and that's how you, that's your bread and butter, that's how you make money. Mm-hmm. Who were some of the guitar players and musical influences in general that were important to you in those days and even maybe prior to that?
I think, well, the guy who made me want to play guitar is, you know, Mr. Ace Frehley, of course.
Very, very cool.
And then shortly thereafter, Mr. Joe Perry.
Nice.
Only one of them I've gotten to play with.
Well, maybe you'll get to play with the other one soon.
But yeah, I'm a huge Zeppelin fan. So Page is, you know, I think the cornerstones are like Page and Townsend, really, at the end of the day, you know, because I'm a songwriter as well, and an orchestrator and a parts guy, you know. But Ritchie Blackmore, that's my guitar hero. Like, that's to me, like, wow, you
right.
know. He's the wizard.
I just...
So he really fires me up.
Yeah, such an amazing player. And Jeff Beck, too. Mm-hmm. But on the Blackmore tip, I should loan you this DVD that Carol Kay just sent me,
oh, wow.
which is Blackmore's last tour playing rock, if you will. You know, now he does the kind of medieval stuff. And it is 1995. He reformed Rainbow and went with Dodgy White and went out and did a tour. And they just released
Dookie.
<this.
laughs>
Dude, he's but dodgy, though.
Dodgy because I was in a band.
I think it's Doogie.
But no, here's the thing. I was in a band at Berkeley with a guy named Dodgy. Dodgy Sanchez.
Oh, okay. It's
Doogie
White.
Doogie White.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Dodgy, his stage name was Dodgy Sands. And he's a really cool guy. He's still a guitarist. And last I heard, he was living in Jersey. And he's a good friend
living
of mine.
Living a dodgy life.
Yeah, dodgy. But I like that. Let's call him Dodgy White, even though his real name is Doogie White. But no, we got to keep that because that's great.
I can swear? Yes?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Oh, crap. Anyway.
Yeah. So anyways, Doogie, Dodgy, Doogie. That's a terrible name. But I like
Scottish.
Dodgy better.
He's Scottish. He's Scottish.
Doogie Hauser, MD.
Yeah. So anyways, but
metal dude.
But in 1995, Blackmore, he's just so on his game.
Oh,
and it's
killer,
just
dude.
A shame that we don't get to hear him really pick up the guitar and play like that anymore.
Yeah.
Because what a great talent. And it's such a weird version of Rainbow. In 1995, it's essentially the Ritchie Blackmore solo show, you know. And,
fine by me.
Candice White, is that her name? She comes out and does backing vocals with him on one song. But yeah, there you go. Dodgy White. Dodgy White. Doogie. Yeah, but was he in Dodgy White? Was he? He wasn't in Heaven's Edge, was he?
No, he played with Yngwie for a while, though.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I think he was with Yngwie.
Yeah.
But now, where's he from? Rob?
He's from like Scotland, I'm pretty sure.
So
I know Chuck Berge and I know Greg Smith, the bass player, you know.
Right.
He plays with Nugent now.
Oh,
and those guys all went on tour with him, so they like, cuz I know those guys cuz I played on Moving Out for a few years.
No, but so you're saying
Dodgy White
played
with
Doogie White played with Rainbow and Yngwie.
Oh, yeah. And Yngwie.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, Doogie White. Okay.
Right. Oh, no, I've hung out with him and he's awesome.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
he's
cool,
a totally good dude. And,
so, anyways, now I'm completely lost. But
that was funny as shit.
Yeah.
Dodgy. It's just a great word.
What's
you're
funny?
Dodgy.
See, did you know Dodgy Sands?
Yeah. an Asian guy, right? At Berkeley. Yeah. So that's why I'm getting it mixed up. Yeah.
Dodgy and I had a band called Sweet 16, which I made up the name,
Lord.
But it was spelled SUITE 16 because, here's like a weird thing, because there was a group out of Pittsburgh that had a song called Sweet 313, and I don't think Paul Gilbert or Richie Kotzen or any of those guys were in it, but I don't know. There was some band, and I got to find out who they were, and if any of you listeners know this, let me know, but they had a song called Sweet 313, and they were a great band out of Pittsburgh, PA, but they were out at the same time Mr. Big had come out. And wasn't Paul Gilbert from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, he's a PA guy. Yeah, right.
Cool. So you mentioned earlier, Rob, that you have not played with Ace, but you have played with Joe Perry. Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, talk about a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I mean, Richie Kotzen was just telling me earlier that, you know, he got to open up for Aerosmith and about how awesome that was. Richie also opened for the Stones in Japan, which we didn't
That's
talk about,
huge.
Which is pretty cool. But you got to play with Aerosmith, right?
Yeah.
Now, how did this all come about?
Well, it came about because...
And when? When was this?
It was for the ill-fated 09 tour. I'm really super, super tight good friends with Russ Irwin, who's their touring keyboard player. So what ended up happening was... It's funny, I got a call like a Friday morning after a gig too. I was all bleary eyed. I had played in Asbury Park with Pisser, and it was like, it was funny. We had this rent a car. We were driving home, and we were bringing back a guy from one of the other bands, and he proceeded to throw up over over Eric in the driver's seat.
And Eric is Eric J. Toast.
Yeah. So we were in this gas station for like the entire night cleaning the thing and making sure the kid was okay to drive again. Anyway, so I'm like, we get home at 5 a.m. and it's like, and at 10 a.m. I get like this call from Russ, and he's like, do you know like every pre 1990 Aerosmith tune? I'm like, yeah, I'm cool with that. Yeah, I got it. He's like, talk to Joe Perry. I'm like, oh,
wow.
I just got the fucking call. That's the call right there.
Man.
And then Joe's like, he's like, look, Brad suffered a hand injury, and he's not going to be able to jump on board the tour. He's going to be out for like 6 months. You know, we're already in it. We can't back out. I know they talked to like Brian Ray from McCartney's band and Dean DeLeo, like, you know, some real heavy hitters, you know, and it was like, and people couldn't do it. And, you know, Russ was like, my friend could do this. He could pull this off, and he loves you guys. So, and also part of the thing was they really wanted someone who could get up there and sing.
Wow.
So, you know, high tenor, you know,
right.
Cut some of that. And, you know, Joe was funny. He was like, well, what do you look like? And I was like, go to my MySpace page. And he was like, nice hat, you know?
Oh, that's cool.
I'm like, yeah, it's cool. He's like, you look great. No problem. And he's like, talk to Steven. I'm like, oh, wow, they're in the same car together. That's kind of cool. And then Steven's like, dude, your dog is so cool.
So they're looking at your pictures and stuff.
Exactly.
That's funny.
I'm like, he's like, I got a dog. His name's Boo Boo. And it's like, you know, he just starts going off on about his dog. And then I'm like, and then at some point, like, the phone goes back to Joe, who's all serious about it. He's like, okay, come up now. He's like, well, maybe, I was like, maybe I can have a day with a pot of coffee to, like, work on the tunes. He's like, we got coffee here. I'm like,
wow,
I got it. You know, that's
so
yes.
So what? So you go immediately to meet them?
More or fucking less?
So you're listening to Aerosmith songs on the way up.
Well, and, what I did, you know, I'm not going to get into it, but it's like it was so intense getting my gear together. All my gear was in PA because we just played in Asbury, and all my guitars were with Anthony Esposito in Pennsylvania. So I'm like, ugh. I had this one crappy Les Paul that wasn't really firing off for me. So it was like kind of a manic thing to just stitch my gear together.
Anthony Esposito, guys, is the Pisser bassist of Pisser, and also has done work with Ace and Lynch Mob and among probably many others. Right, John? Who else has he played with?
Yeah. He's played with other folks. I'm drawing a blank. We love Anthony, but we just don't know anything else about him right now. But anyway, so they sent me a ticket. I got on the train,
right?
You know, and between point A and point B, I just listened to, you know, they were doing the Toys in the Attic album. So it was basically like
from start to finish.
It was like
tours.
Learn for the first rehearsal everything except the hits, and like Combination off of Rocks. And there was something else in there that was like kind of an oddity, like Make It or something like that off the first record. Anyway, so I'm like shedding all this stuff, and it's all really complicated. Like I've always thought, oh, I know these songs, but no, I didn't know them. And it's funny, I was thinking about this. I even went on YouTube to like just because I was like stuck on time. I was like,
right.
How the F do you play Adam's Apple? You know what I mean?
So
and some guy like
YouTube
taught me
lessons,
how to play it. Yes,
right, yeah.
Exactly. I was like, thank you. Yeah. You know, this guy's no idea, you know,
right?
But
right.
Anyway, so I ended up getting on a train. It's like with a couple guitars and all my stuff.
And this is a train to Boston.
Train to Boston, because yeah. They're
it's
like,
amazing they're still based out of Boston.
It's
I mean, great that they're still based out of Boston. Yeah, it's great. It's so many people would have just done the LA thing.
Exactly. But you know, one of the cool things about that too is they were like, "Yeah, you'll go up there and you're gonna play with them in their space with small amps." And I was like, "Hell yeah, that's awesome! Like a bar gig with Aerosmith, you know." So anyway, I get up there. I remember just being on the train heading out, just looking out the window into darkness, you know, and just like tearing up and being like, "I miss my wife."
Right.
But anyway, it was a beautiful, beautiful moment, you know, heading out there and just going right into the belly of the beast there. But so I played, like, as I said, most of the Toys thing. We did like No More and Round and Round, like
awesome,
deep cuts, you know. And Steven left the room at one point. And Joe starts playing Combination, and I was like, somebody's not singing that high part. So I sang Steven's part from Combination.
Okay.
With Joe. And it was just like, I literally like just zoned out, and there it was. Like I was like eighth grade, you know, just playing a record in my head. And Steven came in. He was like, "Damn it, Streisand, that was good, hitting those high notes." you know? Cool. And I was like, wow. It's funny. He busted me on so much guitar shit that day. Like, literally.
When you say he, Steven?
Steven, sorry. Yeah. Steven busted me on so much guitar stuff. No. All the vocal stuff, he's like, great. I was like, wow. Because I'm like, I think of myself as a guitar player first, singer second. I really do. And it's just like, wow. Radar ears over there. I mean, he busted me on like, details. Right. Sick, you know? But it was amazing. Like, I mean, I remember, I think my favorite moment of the whole thing was like, at one point, I think we were playing Uncle Salty or something obscure like that. And I remember just like, hearing it and going like, oh my God, that's what it's supposed to sound like. You know, like, meaning it. Like, that's right. That's what heavy rock, hard rock, 70s rock, that's it, you know?
Now, Rob, were you guys in a room kind of like this, like a rehearsal room?
Yeah,
and it was Tom Hamilton?
Yeah, Tom Hamilton, Joey Kramer, Russ played keys. Yeah. And Steven was like me to you, just looking right at me, and... You know, and Joe was off in his corner doing his thing. At one point, he's like, "Can you turn down a little bit?" I'm like, "Oh, yes."
Wow.
I was like, I can't believe, because I'm usually really like deferential to people on Vime because I'm a singer too. And he was like, "Turn down." I'm like, wow, that's not what I expected. Anyway, but he was great. He was both him and actually everybody was so great to me. Tom Hamilton is the nicest guy in the freaking world. And both Joe and Steven were so nurturing and like, really supportive of, like, they knew I was nervous as hell, you know. I mean, it's like,
so how long were you up there working with them, and what eventually happened was
you know, they asked me to stay after the first day. First day went great, you know. Even my friend Russ, he was like, "Dude, that went as well as that possibly could have. Sounded great, you know." I didn't, you know, wasn't fanboy. It was just, you know, it was all good, you know. And then we went up to where the BU hockey team plays. And they had the whole arena set up there. So then it was like, I actually ended at that point just singing backgrounds. And I had my gear set up, but the other guy, the guy who got the gig is this dude, Bobby Schneck.
Okay.
And he was Brad's tech. Great guitar player.
So obviously. He had a history with them.
A history with them, and he knew the stuff, and it was like, so he ended up jumping on board with that. And, you know, I mean, I sang backgrounds for the rest of the week pretty much. I know Steven was fired up about having like an extra singer.
Right.
Like, we did Toys in the Attic, and it was just like three-part harmony, like blasting. It was just probably one of the best musical moments of my life to just, you know, be nailing that stuff with him. And Russ, his keyboard player is just stellar. I mean, do you know Russ Irwin?
You know what? He definitely sounds familiar, and maybe if I saw him, I'd know who he was. But.
Yeah, he just put out a great record, an independent record, and we did his release at the bitter end, and it was just he's fantastic. Check him out, Russ Irwin.
Cool.
But so that was it. I was there, and then it was funny. The guy who sent me home was Eric Barrett, who's their manager, but he was also Jimi Hendrix's roadie.
Ah,
I was
okay.
Like, you're the guy from the movie, you know. But yeah, so he was like, "Son, I got some bad news for you, mate. You're going home today."
Oh,
I was like, "Ah, it's cool. I play with my favorite band."
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Fuck you guys. No, just kidding.
And Steven Tyler wants a roadie for Jimmy Page, actually.
Ooh. Yeah,
I think Led Zeppelin, although it may have been the Yardbirds. I'm not sure.
I think that was Henry Smith, who you're talking about. And that guy was there, and he was actually in all the rehearsals, and I knew who he was. And he was digging it, and I was just like, this is cool. If this guy's digging it, I'm in good shape.
Yeah, so. Henry Smith is really cool. He wrote Manage Ace for a while.
Yeah.
And he was a really nice guy. Yeah. And you know what was neat is the first time I met him, and it's always hard to, like, this is before I was working with Ace, to explain to somebody that I had known Ace and mm-hmm. different things, but I must have said the right things to him because he knew, he was, like, very cool to me when I first met
him.
Way
cool.
And he was just a great guy. Yeah. And, so that's what a story, Rob. I mean, that is something that
beautiful.
That probably won't ever happen again because, you know, people don't just get to sit in and play with a band like Aerosmith because, you know, they're not looking for another guitarist, but that was such a rare occasion when one of them was injured and, you know, Brad was injured and then you got to go up and do that. So you've gotten to do something with a legendary group that almost no one ever would ever be able
to
do.
Yeah, I'm grateful for that. Really grateful for that.
But, you know, the Aerosmith thing didn't work out exactly.
It did.
It worked out in one way, but in another, mm-hmm. you didn't end up going out with them. However, you have, we're going to talk about Pisser, which is a great hard rocking band, but just kind of outside of the hard rock world and heavy metal world, you've done a lot of big stuff. I mean, I've seen YouTube videos of you on stage with, what's the guy's name? Mark Anthony, right?
Was that Enrique Iglesias.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what's funny about that is, I did with the Aerosmith thing was in Boston, and it was like, you know, going in my bags to the train station and leaving. But the next time I went back was to kick off the second leg of his big Euphoria tour when he had the huge hits a couple years ago. And it was like, first night, Boston Garden. I was like, okay, what's up, Boston? I'm back.
Cool.
It was nice. It was really...
And you've done some of the high profile Broadway stuff here in New York City too.
Yeah. So that stuff's fun.
Back to the Boston thing. How cool was that going from Berkeley student to Boston Garden?
Great. It's great.
Like, that's the ultimate success.
I mean, it's my third home. I have three hometowns, and that's one of them. This is one, New York City, where I grew up, upstate New York, Cornwall, New York, and then Boston. I mean, you know, we all feel that way probably to some degree about Boston.
Yeah.
Like we spent years
yeah,
there.
Yeah, we were all there for, like, and at a time in our life where,
big time.
You know, it was, you know, you grow a lot during those years. And you know what? I always knew your hometown, not just because I, knew you and roomed with you, but remember that you were like, one of the first people I knew to have, and this is, you're probably not even going to believe that I remember this, but remember that Berkeley CD that came out?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, look at Rob. He's got his name. It's like, this is before, like, everybody and their friend could make, like, CDs in their house. And, like, to have, like, your song, like, on, like, an actual real compact disc with real graphics and your name. And I remember it said Cornwall on Hudson, I think.
Oh, that's wild.
Your town was listed on that.
Oh, that's neat.
But yeah, I know this is like just a small thing, but to me it was a cool thing. Tell everybody what I was talking about.
About that? Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, this is still like late 80s and it's like, you know.
It's a compilation CD.
Yeah, it was a compilation CD from students. And I was representing the rock guys on that. It's funny, actually, Tishy's playing drums on that. Brian Tishy, yeah. So the funny thing is I remember Don Palouse was involved in that.
I remember him.
Yeah. And, you know, he engineered, like, Sly Stone's biggest records. I mean, massive records. Wow. And I was the biggest Sly Stone fan in college. I had no idea. Like, because I just wasn't in the game. You know, I wasn't paying attention. But I remember walking in, like, he was mixing it or something for the thing. And he put my vocal on me. He was like, sounds like there's a frog in here or something like that. I was like... Oh, whatever. You're not on the CD, dude.
Yeah. Speaking of Sly Stone, I think he's going to be at the Chiller Theater Expo.
Oh, boy.
Which Ace is going to be at, and I'll be at. Cool. So if you want to come down at the end of October, you can meet Ace, and you can meet Sly
that
Stone.
Sounds like
if
fun.
He's going to be there, but I'm pretty sure he is going to be there.
You can play some harmonica now?
Out in Jersey? No, these are my new glasses.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I was just,
looking good, dude.
Yeah, I've hit the age where you guys have both have glasses since I've
been
known,
wearing them since I was little. Yeah,
but I actually, I need them now. So
that's right. I almost wore ones that look like yours, so we would have had
So what else should we hit upon? Oh, Pisser.
Yes, please.
Okay, so let's talk about what's going on now. You just played a gig last week with the newly reformed Pisser.
Yeah.
We had all you guys on. I think that was time you were on Talking Metal down at Ultrasound.
Right.
John and I went down and met up with you guys. And let's talk about Pisser, the band, and who is currently in Pisser, because there's been numerous people in and out of that band throughout the year, with, of course, the consistent of
Eric J. Toast,
right? Who's currently in the band?
It was,
besides
yourself,
so it's
Eric
on
J.
guitar.
Toast, Anthony Esposito on bass, Frank Ferrer on drums. And
I haven't
myself.
Seen him. Frank lives, I think he still lives in my hometown.
Down the street from you pretty
much.
Yeah,
I haven't seen him in years.
Yeah.
Literally. So I need to catch up with him.
He's like kicking butt. I mean, we were all just sort of rapping about getting something together, going in and doing a proper sort of record, you know.
Right.
And
so there's going to be a record.
Going to be a record. It's starting up with gigs. We just played Bowery Electric in New York City on a great bill. It was like Queen V was on it, and I'm spacing on some of the other bands. But it was like a real like New York rock night. And it's funny because it kind of made me feel like, this seems like it's kind of coming back a bit. You know,
right.
Like, and I ran into Morgan from Snake Canyon. You know that dude. He used to be in Supervillain, and he was like, and I was like, oh, yeah, you're here, and you're here, and you're here. It's like everybody's like coming out of the woodwork right now. And,
right.
And it felt like good. The scene was healthy.
The one thing about Pisser is I really think you guys need a better online presence. Eric J. Toast, he's doing the Twitter thing, but he doesn't seem to know what's going on with that. I was trying to help him out, get some followers. I actually retweeted his Twitter handle to the 7,000 Talking Metal followers on Twitter.
Cool.
It didn't seem, I don't think anybody followed him though, but because I just think, I think there's a lot of people that go back and discover stuff now, like younger kids or people in faraway places who weren't a part of the, you know, 90s New York City scene, and they can go back and discover stuff. And I think it's important that Pisser get a Wikipedia page, that Pisser get page, that there's maybe some tweeting going on or whatever. It just maybe some free downloads of the old shit, you know, because kids love that. No one pays for this stuff anymore.
No,
it's like,
don't.
And it's like, so I just feel like there is, a lot of great stuff that Eric put out with Honky Toast, that a band I used to go see, and also with Pisser, that is kind of buried out there and not accessible to the listeners who may enjoy that type of music. So that, not that you're asking for it, but
no,
that's my advice.
No, I appreciate you saying it, and I totally agree with you. And I think that, it was funny, we've just really just been sort of... getting this back up and running sort of on the fly, it's really been just sort of, moment by moment. And like the gig actually materialized because it was one of Eric's solo gigs. And then he was like, why did everybody play? Come on, everybody let's play.
Right.
And so that's how that kind of happened. And now it's just a matter of, we're just going to hammer away at it. But I think that's a big part of it for sure.
Yeah, and guys, just to review, Pisser is a band featuring our friend Rob Bailey, who's here in the Gibson Studios with us right now. It's a band that features Anthony Esposito, again, who's played with Ace and Lynch Mob. And it also features Frank Ferrer from Guns N' Roses fame.
You know, the thing that I love about the band is it's like very... it's cut from like a little bit of a AC/DC cloth, it's a little bit Stooges-esque in spots too. And it's like, it's just kind of a wild band, and I think it's loud in the clubs, and it's just, it's not polite, and it's just, I don't know. It just feels really different than everything else you'd hear out there. And I think but it's strong, it's a strong band. So I'm psyched to have it back as part of my part of my existence, you know?
Absolutely. You know? And I think, Rob, you did the gig with Pisser that was at the club that was on, like, near the Limelight on the second floor.
Oh, yeah.
What was that place called again? That we played there.
Scott Weiland's club, right?
Yeah. Remember where we played with Captain T and Astronomy?
Above
the
tomato.
I can't think of the name of the place, but it was on the second floor, and I was an idiot and took in like 2 to 3 stacks, I think, for us to use in that place, Captain T and Astronomy, which was so stupid.
I fell down the stairs at that club.
Oh, yeah. The club is, God, it's going to come to us. But yeah, I remember that gig. We played a gig.
Snitch. Good one.
Stitch or Snitch?
Snitch.
Yeah.
Snitch.
Yeah, I remember. I totally omitted a part of the song when we were playing there. It was Dust. I skipped a section, and John just kept playing. It was a big mess, and the whole song was messed up.
Did you have your whole thing going on?
Yeah, yeah. But he doesn't miss a beat. He just, like, if you make a mistake, John just keeps doing the show, which is what you got to do, you know? It's just very Spinal Tap.
Absolutely.
Tap-esque.
Believe it or not, I played Stonehenge on a Silver Sparkle mini Firebird mandolin.
Oh my Lord.
To bring the Spinal Tap reference all around. That's going all in. Yeah. No, seriously, I had silver road cases. I had camouflage netting to supplement like Mark's character, because Mark, am I allowed to say this? Is it out in the open now that Mark's stage name was Captain T, and he was an ex-CIA agent or something like that. And so basically, I had like a whole
declassified
army.
Declassified.
I had like an army vibe going, and the amps were green on that gig, and then there was camouflage netting. And then on my side, I had these, you know, like when you see like a dryer vent, and it has like a silver kind of like aluminum foil looking tube coming out of it. I had them coming off my side. It was almost like, you know, in the Destroyer stage, they had like little space things for Ace, and like, you know, the tree over by Gene Simmons, and
totally
that's what we were trying to do. But we did it all out on the second floor of a bar, and that was the most ridiculous thing.
But that place was great.
Yeah, it was a cool rocked. That place had a great vibe, and they were trying to do a reality show, or, you know, trying to get some interest out of there at one point, but they didn't. And I think it was owned by Scott Weiland, Duff McKagan, and the guy from Fuel, Brent Scallions.
Oh, Brett, yeah.
Or Brett Scallions.
Is it Brett or Brett?
I think it's Brett.
Yeah, it's Brett, right?
Yeah, so, and wasn't he going out?
Dodgy Scallions.
Dodgy Sands.
Dodgy Scallions.
Dodgy Scallions. I think his name was actually Dodgy, but
those Scallions are dodgy.
But that was a fun time. I'm trying to think of, Rob, just going back to just some of the old days. You know what is really funny? I hope this is not politically incorrect.
Uh-oh.
No, but back in the old days, back when we were living on East 9th Street, I walked out on the street one day, and Rob Fiorentino was with me, and there was this three-legged dog walking down the street. And do you remember that dog? No, you remember that dog? And this guy the guy walking it, we go, oh, what happened to that dog? And he totally serious, and he never broke his act. He goes, we go, what happened to that dog? And he goes, AIDS.
Oh my God.
No, this is he goes like this. He goes, AIDS. No, I got it. He goes, AIDS. You gotta listen. It's three words. You gotta listen. He goes like this. AIDS. Dog. AIDS.
And that was it.
Dog AIDS.
That's how he said it. It was in that.
Oh my God.
In that, is that called a cadence? He just goes, AIDS. Dog. AIDS.
Is there a Pisser song recorded that we could actually play on today's episode?
I mean, I could send you some. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if the Well, let's do it right now. Why don't you intro one? Is that cool?
Yeah. I'm sure Eric would be cool. I mean, you guys played something before.
We did?
Yeah.
I don't know. I probably don't. It would be too hard for me to find it.
No, I can send it to you later. All right, we'll check out a little bit of Pisser. It's a little something called She's All Right.
Cool. What you just heard was Pisser. She's All Right is the name of that song. Do some research and find out some info on these guys. You know, do a Google search and somebody needs to
maybe they'll have their online presence together by then.
Somebody needs to set up a fan website or something. Maybe I'll set it up. We'll see. But Pisser, great New York City band featuring some real great guys and players and musicians.
So, Rob, in addition to Pisser and all your studio work that you're doing, you are starting a production company. Tell us about that.
You know, I've been working with some great people lately in the capacity of being a producer. Usually when I produce, I end up playing, but sometimes no. You know, I'm totally open to that. I just did a record with a gal named Jesse Galante, I worked with Jack Daly on that, who's the bass player from Lenny Kravitz's band. You know, you've seen him on like the American Woman video and Fly Away and all that. Yeah, so we work together quite a bit, and he's just phenomenal as a mixer, a producer, and a bass player.
I remember that you knew him from way back when, like even in the early 90s, you were friends with him.
Oh, no, not that far back, but he's you know, I did some stuff with him, like going back to like 98, like he played on some records that I played on and stuff. But anyway, so that's one thing. But, you know, I just recorded a whole bunch of solo stuff with Frankie Infanti, who is the original guitar player from Blondie. He was like on all the big hits, and that stuff turned out really wild. It's like kind of almost like Stones meets Lou Reedish, and the lyrics are phenomenal. He's actually got a tune that's sort of about himself on there and about the band, which I'm really excited to have people hear that. That's kind of like we're mixing right now and finishing that up. Working with Michael Devon, the bass player from Whitesnake,
okay,
who's
cool.
A phenomenal writer, singer. it's kind of got like this real like stomping rock and roll thing going on, like really unique spin. It's
is he on the last live?
He's on the last live record.
Yeah,
he's
that's
on,
a great on, record, man. He's on the, I really like that record.
He's on the studio version, the studio album before that too.
Oh, okay, yeah. Guys, if you haven't heard of Whitesnake, have a new double disc, double CD live record out, and it's just such a great trip down memory lane for any Whitesnake fans, and they include some newer songs in there too. It's a really good listen. I'm not like a real big fan of post 1980
right.
live records, but this was a good one. I definitely have it in my car. I've been listening to it quite a bit. And so Mike plays bass on that.
Yeah, and he sings his ass off too. I mean, he's like cool. He's like in that Paul Rogers, David Coverdale tradition, like big baritone-y kind of like excellent. You know, fat sound. I'm working on a project called the Perfume with my lady, my wife, the artist formerly known as Aaron Evermore. And that's really been great.
Cool.
Minimal fights.
Oh, cool. And who was the
songs.
Girl you were playing with? You were on like, was it Regis and Kathy Lee
oh,
one
yeah,
day?
Yeah, no, I turned no, that was Delta TV. Goodrum. She's like kind of like the Christina Aguilera of Australia.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
And like I did the Letterman and the View and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Or she's, with a View, I guess that's what I saw you
so
on.
So she's
yeah.
like, yeah, she's like down there for a while, you know, like. Doing that whole thing, I think that's really turned into a good thing for her.
Cool.
Desi, the voice is what she's doing down there.
Oh, well,
yeah,
I didn't
like,
know
so
that.
She's
okay.
sort of like
okay.
the Australian version of that is
right.
Happening
oh,
for
okay,
her,
cool.
So.
And the thing you're
she's
doing
great.
With your wife is a rock
it's a,
thing,
it's
or
a, it's a rock thing. It's you know, a little bit pushing an alternative thing. You know,
okay,
maybe almost like I don't know. I mean. Maybe almost a little White Stripes-ish in spots, but very
oh, cool.
tuneful, very, you know.
Right.
Not like the drums and guitar thing, like not that kind of setup, but like kind of grimy like that. And
excellent.
She's a great singer, so it'll be cool to have that really pop.
Cool. Well, keep us posted on
absolutely.
That. We could, you know, we do this other podcast now called Talking Rock, which
oh, yeah.
is kind of for stuff that isn't really hard rock or heavy metal. So
I'm raising my hand, brother.
Yeah, when you're ready, you can come back with your wife if you'd like, and
sounds
we can
good.
We can do a interview for Talking Rock, right, John?
No doubt about it, Rob.
Right
you are welcome to come on any Talking Metal episode you want to come on.
I will take that into consideration, gentlemen.
And you know what? I want to also make one of your dreams come true too. And I, you know, I think someday it could happen. You should do a jam someday with Ace or something.
Would
I mean,
love,
that would be
would
very
love.
Cool. But so.
Well, since you show me the right way to play cold gin,
okay, then
Paul
I really,
Stanley style,
I,
maybe
wow,
that's
cool.
the one. Yes.
Okay, I love that. See, most people don't know that Paul was playing like a part that you wouldn't. Ever normally pick out.
Nope.
But
I wouldn't have picked that out.
You know, I picked it out just because I put the balance all the way over to the other side and was able to hear like the way that particular song was mixed on some of the early records. But it sounds so cool. I've never played that with like another musician. Maybe we can jam that too.
I would love that. I would love
it,
that.
It just, I love the combination of Paul's part mixed with Ace's part on that.
Well, that's 70s hard rock in a nutshell for you. I mean, like with the two guitar bands, like, I mean, those are my favorite too. I think most people's favorite too, actually. But like, you know, you've got like part number one and part number two. It's like, it usually they're very different and or slightly different, and it just makes a cool rub in the sound, you know. But the Cold Gin's a great example of that.
Perfect song.
Yeah.
Let's go out with a little more Winery Dogs. This is a song that opens their album, which is the self-titled album, The Winery Dogs. One of the really my favorite records of 2013. I sincerely mean that. And this is called Elevate. Guys, support Talking Metal. Go make a PayPal donation. Use those Amazon links. You guys know the drill. We need your support. This is Elevate.